Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster, for the Heal It Show today. And I have my co-host with me today, Dr. James Lee.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's good to have you, man. Good to have you here.
It's great to be back out on your show. It's I always have fun. We always have a great conversation. I always look forward to spending time with you. So this is great. Thanks for having me.
Well, today we're going to do something a little different. You know, over the last 30 years, I've gone through many transformations myself. Dr. Lee has also gone through his own transformations. We're going to talk today about the mindset it takes to really heal whatever you have going on in your body, whether it's something in your physical body, whether it's something in your mental, emotional body, even spiritually. We're going to tap on some of these subjects today. So this is a show, I believe, that is going to really empower you and be able to help you to maybe get some hacks. We'll call them hacks. Hacks that'll help you to really empower yourself, empower your life, and take your life to the next level. So Dr. James and I, we're going to have fun. This is going to be fun with us.
Yeah. Absolutely. You call them hacks, pearls of wisdom. Hard-earned nuggets of experience is the way I like to see it.
Yeah, I don't know if they are hard-earned, and they're also sometimes very difficult to go through what we've been through. And we're gonna get a little personal with our audience today. You know, some of the challenges that you've had, some of the challenges that I've had. But listen, it's not about us. The reason we do these shows, this show is for you to be able to really take your life to a completely new level. So we hope you'll enjoy this show. We hope you'll pass this show on to your family and friends. And we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to hop right into it. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Ken D. Foster. My co-host is sitting here in studio with me. But before we get into the show, I want to let you know that these shows, again, are done for you. We hope that you will subscribe to our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com/@TheCourageNetwork if you'd like to subscribe to our shows. That way you can pass them on to your family and friends. We hope that you'll do that and let everybody know about these amazing hacks we're going to be talking about so you can heal, again, all areas of your life. All right, listen, you know, I got on this path of healing back in 1992, and I was sitting in a, you know, I was at a place in my life. I was a stockbroker, security principal, arbitrator for the National Association of Security Dealers. Had about a year and a half earlier, maybe 2 years, we'd started up this organization within the Bank of America. And I was doing about $200 million a year with this company, you know, started from scratch myself and, you know, a handful of people. And, you know, I'm at the top of my game, and but everything's falling apart for me. You know, I'm surrounding myself with what I call lower companions. I'm estranged from my wife. I'm, you know, 50 pounds overweight. I'm you know, just doing, just partying, doing things I shouldn't be doing. And I'm in therapy. I'm in therapy for a year. And I go to this doctor and I say, "Doc, I'm hearing this little voice." And he says, "Ken, what's it saying?" And remember, I've been with this guy for a year. And I said, "Well, it says you got to feel the pain to make the change." And he looks at me and he's got these steel blue eyes and this gray hair. He's sitting in this big chair and he says, "Ken, I can not do anything more for you. You have to follow that voice." And as I walked out of the office, I'm
graduated.
Like, what the heck? What the follow the voice? What voice? Doesn't he like me anymore? Did, you know, I mean, I'm paying my bills on time with him. I don't get it. But, you know, that was the voice of truth. It was the voice of courage. And that evening, I made a phone call I never wanted to make. I called the recovery center and I walked in the doors and my life changed forever. That's my story. You know, that's where it started, right? You got to feel the pain to make the change. Man, I've lived my life from that place since then. You know, whether it's, you know, learning how to ride a bike and go through the challenges of bicycling or start a business. Or become a triathlete, which I did for 20 years. All of that, I had to feel that discomfort, that pain, that place that I don't want to do to change up everything. That's my story. What's your story, James?
Wow, Ken, I don't think I've ever heard your full story like that from beginning to end. That was that was quite moving. And it just highlights how sometimes it takes something big to force us to realize where we are in life. I commend you because you were still in a place in your life where you could still make a decision. You had to make a decision about your life, and it was a big one, and you decided to do it. For me, my decision was made for me. similar situation. I had just finished medical school. I was in training. I just finished training as an anesthesiologist. So I was working for the first 3 years, 3 to 4 years, really as a real doctor, fully trained anesthesiologist. And I'm working 90 hours a week, 100 hours a week, literally just if you count the number of hours that you're supposed to be sleeping, that's pretty much all of them. I spent all of them in the hospital working my butt off. And I was really neglecting my personal health, emotional health, my physical health. I didn't realize what was going on until it was too late. 3, 4, 5, 6 years into practice, I'm just putting more and more onto my workload. I'm saying yes to everything. I was working at 8 or 9 different hospitals at one point. I would wake up. I wouldn't know where I was going on any given day. I just, Tuesday. Okay, I got to go to, I got to go to this hospital. And it was my life was running ragged. And it stopped abruptly when one day I was working in the ORs, trying to finish up a case. And I pass out while I'm doing a case. I basically almost pass out. I have to keep myself alive and functioning to wake up this patient, get her to the recovery room while the OR team is getting me to the ER. And it turned out I had a brain tumor. So I spent the next 3 to 5 years trying to recover from that, as well as a neck injury that I sustained while recovering from the neck tumor. So from the brain tumor. So I had 3 to 5 years where my brain wasn't working right, and another 3 to 5 years where my body didn't work right. And so the decision was made for me. God, nature, the universe decided, you know what, you're working too hard. It's time to put you on the sidelines, and you're gonna rest for a while. So that was my story. And so
your story is I'm listening to it, and I'm thinking of the similarities that we both have. I mean, for you to go through that struggle, that pain, that unknown, what is happening to me? In my case, it was very similar. I didn't know how the drug and alcohol abuse had taken over my mind, my body, my everything. So there was a part of me that was like walking around in a daze, not really, going through the functions of life, right? Yes. But not living life. And I think that, it's interesting because I think as we get into our stories now, the way that we both recovered, although differently, we both had to heal physically. We both had to heal mentally and emotionally and spiritually. And, your story is different than mine, but we went through that process. And it was, for you, it was very painful. For me, it was very painful. And, for me and you, I know because I know your story a little bit, you had to let go of a lot of ways. Well, you were instantly letting go of a lot of ways.
It was torn from my hands. I just have to let go. It was torn from my hands, and I had to figure out what to do with what was left of my life. I mean, you have to consider. I had a medical degree from Stanford. I had a degree from Yale in molecular biophysics and biochemistry. I was a trained anesthesiologist, and when this brain tumor hit, there were literally days where I had trouble trying to brush my teeth in the morning. I had to figure out my toothbrush and my toothpaste. One of them I had to unscrew, the other one I had to wet, and it took me 15 minutes to brush my teeth. And so who I was doctor, Stanford educated doctor. That was, I mean, I was nowhere near that. I was someone that could barely wash and brush my teeth.
Well, here's what people don't realize about addiction. I had been using for so long that had become my reality. So when I stopped, I didn't know how to read anymore. I would read a page, I'd turn the page, I would not remember anything. And I'd had to start over reading. If you were to brush the teeth, I really never learned how to brush my teeth. I didn't know how to bathe myself at that time. I had to relearn like my whole life, which sounds really silly, but that's what happened. Because when you live in an altered state for so long, you and then all of a sudden that state is gone. You're not living in that state. Now you're living in what we would call reality. And everything you learned was in that altered state. For me, it was a month later, I was no longer running this organization anymore. I had left. I spent, I left everything, right? I knew number one in my life, I had to heal. And so for the next 2 years, that's what I did. We could talk about our stories about
I'm just curious, what was the first step for you? What was the first conscious thing where you said, okay, this is what I'm going to work on?
The first step was reading. I had to learn how to use my short-term memory. My short-term memory is gone. And I had to learn how to use that again. And I did that by starting to read again. Over a five-year period, I consumed over 500 books at that stage of my life, which was insane. Wow. But, and imagine reading three lines, forgetting it, going back, reading, forgetting it, going back, reading, forget it, going back, finally getting it and going, okay, now I can go to, I had very little comprehension of what I was reading. It was weird.
Like you said, we're coming at this from opposite ends of the spectrum. Cause when this brain tumor hit, I was in a similar situation where it wasn't that I couldn't comprehend. It was painful to even think. So my first step was I realized I had to fix my brain with this brain tumor. I couldn't think. I was in mental fog all the time. When it at its worst, I was literally good for maybe one good thought a day, like literally just one good clear thought where like it, from beginning to end, I could actually come up with some kind of coherence. So for me, it was the pain and mental energy with which it took to even think. That was where I was. Like, it wasn't like I read something, oh, I forgot it, I got to do it again. It hurt to even read. It hurt to even turn on my computer. Like, I didn't realize how many steps there were involved just to read your email. Like I say, read your email right now. It'd be no brainer to you. You turn on your phone, click, click, you put in your passwords and you'd be reading your email. To me, I would think, oh my, where's my phone? I don't know where my phone is. If I found my phone, which of these buttons again do I press to turn? I mean, it was a huge ordeal just to even turn my, so I didn't watch TV. I didn't read my phone. I didn't read email. I didn't talk to people. So there was a huge portion of my life where I was barely functioning, and that was what I had to overcome. Just the pain of living.
You had to overcome that, and I had to overcome it my way. I want to say this: my illness was self-inflicted. I don't know if yours was, but I think mine was.
I think at some level, it's all self-inflicted.
It's all self-inflicted. I think that's what I would. That's where I came to the conclusion. Now, there were reasons that I was self-medicating. Okay, and there were I was probably, my life is a lot like yours, going, stressed out all the time, never slowing down. Always busy. The mind's always rattling. Not knowing how to really handle myself emotionally, storing up, negative emotions,
filled it with work,
right?
You filled it with work and substances. Yeah. I just said, I'm going to fill it with work. I'm going to fill it with responsibility. I'm going to fill it with things that make me feel like, a bigger person. I'm a doctor. I take care of people. You know, I didn't think of it that way at the time, but I look back and realize that those were the motivating factors that forced me to make wrong decisions. I wasn't forced by any means. I'm not saying that, but it allowed me to choose those things because I was rewarded in some way of not having to deal with the other anxieties that were, you know, that were real in my life.
So, okay, we're going to take a break. We come back. So we've talked to you a little bit about we've taken personal responsibility for what's happened in our world, right? That's step one. Personal, step one is, you know, for me was getting out, you know, just asking for help. You had no choice. You got help.
Yeah.
We had to get some support. We had to get help. Step two, you know, for us was at one level, at some point, we had to get out of denial. This is the way it is. Okay. We had to go, okay, now what? Now what do we do? How do we get out of these deep, dark patterns? In case your case, physically incapacitated, how do we get to the next level? We're going to be talking about that when we get back from
Absolutely.
Break. Here we go.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. I'm with my co-host today, Dr. James Lee. I'm going to back up a step. You know, we're talking about the, I was in my early 40s when this happened to me. I think you were pretty similar. Is that?
I was 39 with the initial brain tumor attack, but basically late 30s through my 40s is when I was dealing with this.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think there's a piece here. It's like, you know, a lot of people, I've been a business strategist, life coach for over 30 years now. And a lot of people have come to me in these crises that they've created for themselves right around that age. You know, it's at 38, 48, something like that. There's a lot of people go through this. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I think we have some people listening to us who are going like, yeah, I'm going through some really weird stuff and I'm not sure what to do, how to get to the next level. Well, let's talk about that, our next levels. You know, we talked about... a little bit about, you know, the physical side and start learning how to read again. What we really needed to do, both me and James, is we had to learn how to reconnect with our soul first, okay? And I say this because as I learned over the years, you know, it's everything comes out of this thing we call God, universe, love. And yes, you know, that is over, and out of that comes individual souls. So the spirit is over the soul. The soul is over the mind, mental, and that's conscious, subconscious, superconscious. The mind is over the emotions, emotions over the actions, and actions over results, right? So we had to get, you know, some people try to change their life up at the level of mind, and you can do that very well, but we had to go deeper.
Yes.
James, we had that heart, right?
And it was actually interesting because I came to it... not accidentally, but I came at trying to fix myself from the viewpoint of a scientist and a doctor. And so my brain doesn't work. So I got to fix my brain. That was the obvious thing for me. So I'm like, okay, how do I fix my brain? If I want my brain to be stronger, I need to work it out. So I thought of my brain as kind of like my body. If I want to work out my body, my brain, if I want to improve it, I got to work it out. If I have to work it out, I got to make sure, you know, muscles need protein to build. And I said, well, what does brain need to build? And I went back to my biochemistry, my medicine, and I realized we need phosphatidylcholine. And what is that? That's the term for the little pieces, parts that our bodies put together, the bricks of our neurons. I said, well, what do we need to make those bricks? And I looked back and we need omega-3 fatty acids. And this thought process sounds very simple and straightforward, but while I was having these problems in this mental fog, this took me probably like a week to come up with, like just go through that same process. And I realized I had to fix my diet. I had to make sure that I was taking in the right foods for my brain to be able to be built. I got to do the right things. I got to exercise my brain. I got to use it. I realized fixing myself was using my brain. And so, boom, I got two of those pieces already, like the diet and the regimen. But I realized I needed the motivation to do this, Ken. I mean, this is a lot of work. Like after the first couple days, I got tired. I'm like, I can't do this. This is not, I can't keep this up. Here's what I realized. I couldn't, me myself, thinking about it, I couldn't keep this up. But throughout this process, doing it and giving up, getting depressed, I realized, you know what? During this whole thing, I was relying more on my wife. During this process, I was relying more on my kids and my family. I was calling my father more, my brothers more. And you don't understand, I was so busy and I was success oriented my whole life. I had never really called my father for anything. I'd never really called my brothers for any reason. And here now I was calling my parents and my brothers to tell them that I missed them and that I loved them, because I was at a point in my life where I realized those were the things that were important. And as I worked on these relationships and I realized I had these relationships, so I had people that I cared about, I had reasons to want to live. I had reasons to want to make myself better. That became the motivating factor more than I just want to fix my brain. And I realized that's the energy, that's the life that I needed to, in the first place. If I realized that these relationships and these connections were that important and that fulfilling, I probably wouldn't have been working so hard, quite honestly.
You know, I think what you're talking about, and that's the next step here, it's the same thing that I did a little differently, but we had to reconnect. We had to reconnect. See, we would disconnect. I was disconnected. I was disconnected from myself. I was disconnected from my family. I was disconnected from my creator. I was just disconnected. And that's what I'm hearing with you. You had to learn how to reconnect, but not connect in just passing by. Hi, Dad. How you doing?
No.
Reconnect with understanding Dad, understanding our relationship, understanding
I will tell you the one conversation that I had with my father that changed everything, changed absolutely everything. Up to that point, my father and I had a very, I mean, he was my father. I was his son. We had a good father-son relationship, but we didn't have a close relationship. We never said anything emotionally to each other. We've never said any words of support to each other. It's, how are you doing? How was work? You know, how are your bills? You know, that very, very, you know, high-level stuff. At one point, I called my father, and I was calling him regularly, at least once a week at this point. And before this, maybe once a year, if I'm lucky. And if then I call home, I talk to my mom, I talk to my dad, my dad, yeah, talk to mom. So literally one conversation, 30 seconds long, you know, our conversation is very short. He doesn't like to talk, but 30 seconds, he says, okay, I got to go. I'm like, Dad, wait. I need to tell you something. And I've been thinking about this a while. I realized that I had gone through a very serious health crisis. I probably wasn't going to die. My physicians, my doctors got me to the point where the brain tumor was controlled. It wasn't going to go out of control. I'm going to live, but it severely altered my life. And I contemplated death and death disability very seriously during this period. And I said, Dad, it would be a shame if you or me weren't able to hear this at some point. I just want to make sure that you knew that I loved you and that I hope that in some small way that I make you proud as your son. And you have to understand, we've never said words, wow, anything like this. Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even get any words out after that. All I heard was the sound of him trying to say something. A couple seconds later, I hear a click. Like he literally, I blew him emotionally away so much he couldn't even get words out. But that has changed. Since then, I have felt so much better about my father. Whenever I call my dad, my mom tells me that he's happy all day after we talk. And it may be just 30 seconds, but the music, the background music with, that I hear about my dad has changed, even if though I'm not talking to him. So
you know, it's interesting because, you know, as you're saying that, I'm thinking, so what did James reconnect with? He reconnected with himself and his love. He reconnected with the love in his heart. And as a result, when you made that phone call, dad felt it. My dad couldn't talk. He felt that energy, that love, that real love, that sincere love flow through. So that's another piece that we, you know, I bring in and you bring in every day today. You know, it was rare probably in the early days.
Yes.
You feel this, but that's, yes, you know, it's love heals all, actually, if we can get it at the level that you got it.
You know, okay? I've thought about this a lot because during the time where I was healing, I would be by myself 24 hours a day for periods of years, because I'm with my brain and with my neck. And I thought about this a lot. So we've always heard, you know, love, support, comfort, caring, happiness, joy. These are all good emotions. And fear, anxiety, negativity, they're all, you know, bad emotions. And why? And I thought about this and I came to the conclusion, I thought about this medically, and it boils down to adrenaline. It really is just, adrenaline is the key. And we've heard about this a lot. Adrenaline does everything. It's good, it's bad. What does it do? It's really an amplifier for who we are. They did studies back in the 60s. They would inject little bits of adrenaline into subjects and see how they felt. And the results were across the board. Some people felt angry. Some people felt in love. Some people felt anxious. Some people felt like they were late for work. And it turns out whatever the subjects were feeling before they got the injection was amplified by the injection. The lady that was just got engaged and just got off the phone with her fiance, she got a little bit of adrenaline. She felt like she was in love. The gentleman that got cut off on the highway by somebody, and he in road rage, he was angry and wanted to go out and drive and make, you know, get revenge. Adrenaline amplifies everything. So we have to realize that whatever state that we are in, because adrenaline's going to be pumped into our bodies eventually. We're going to hit something. Whatever our state is in, that's going to be amplified. And here's the key. Here's the key. Once you get stuck in that mode, it is possible to switch gears. It is, but it takes energy and intention to do that. And that's where we are here to tell you, intention and energy is the effort that's required to change that course. Wherever you're headed right now, you're headed down this path, you're barreling 100 miles an hour. How hard is it to change course at 100 miles? Very hard. You got to do it very gently and you got to do it smoothly. You got to do it with intention. So that's where we are at 40 years of our life, 45 years at we're barreling down the road at 100 miles an hour because we've been taught and we've been trained and we're good at what we're supposed to be doing, supposedly. And so, boom, that's all we're doing. We're just barreling down that road.
Yeah. Well, that really brings to the next level, because for lasting healing, okay, once you identify what it is that you'd like to heal, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, just identify it. Intention, set your intention. This is what I'm going to heal. That's what I had to do. That's what James did.
Yep.
And then, you know, there's a release process that goes through this, because, I would call it release or a surrender. I know I had to surrender the job that I was doing. I had to surrender my thinking around my relationship with my children, my wife. I had to surrender this ego, right? Of I'm always right. I know what to do. I had to surrender the next steps because I wasn't sure what I just lived in a place of allowing, you know, in the past, I believed everything that my mind, you know, my brain came up with. I believed it. But then I had to question everything that I was thinking, because I had some real, I would call it, you know, recovery talk, stinking thinking, right? Really ridiculous stuff. And I would believe that. But then I got some space. I got some space through meditation to learn how to be the observer of these thoughts. And that gave me Because ultimately, James, what I wanted to do was live from a place of, and I think we all want this, peace and calmness,
yeah,
and a place of love, of joy, of happiness. I wanted that. But because of the way I was thinking, I am believing so many negative thoughts. So what I had to do first, and I bet you did this, you know, by default anyway, we had to unplug. I had to unplug from the news, from a lot of the old books that I was reading about drama and violence and sex and all. I had to just disconnect from that and relearn it and start to study people that had what I wanted, peace and joy and happiness and love. I started studying that. And as a result of that, I started reprogramming the subconscious mind to live from that place. Why? Because of just what James said. I love what you said. I didn't want my adrenaline going out when I'm angry and living from that place, because I learned, even though I could restart my day, any point in the day, I could restart it. I learned how to do that. It was difficult. And I didn't like my behaviors when I was upset and angry and saying things that, you know, I thought I was right. I didn't need to do that anymore. That was part of this recovery process.
And part of that, and I hear it for you as well as for me, part of that was the realization that all of that was programmed. These are programmed reactions in me.
Yes.
You talk about our intrinsic reactions to daily pain even. Okay, so I, up until the point of my brain tumor and my neck injury, and don't get me wrong, this still took me months to modulate and to change. But up until that point, to me, pain automatically came with anxiety and anger. Like, to me, pain and anger, anxiety, all the same thing. Like, you hit your thumb with a hammer, who wouldn't be anxious and angry, right?
Yeah.
But here's what I realized. When you dealt with as much pain as that I did, like, literally, even thinking about picking up a hammer would cause me pain. I couldn't even get to the point of hitting my finger with a hammer. Everything was painful. And so what I realized is that my pain, my brain pain, like, let's take my brain pain.
Yeah.
Pain is supposed to teach you something.
You know what? I gotta wait a second. Pause it. I gotta take a break. We're gonna come right back and talk about how pain can heal us.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. I'll be right back with my co-host, Dr. James. We're going to talk about how pain can heal us. Before we get there, I want to let you know that I have a new book out. It's called The Courage to Change Everything, Daily Strategies and Essential Wisdom to Awaken Your Inner Genius. So we talked about reprogramming the subconscious mind. It's one of the reasons I wrote this book. This book is filled with wisdom, with understanding, with specific steps for you to take every single day. It's just a daily read, one page, one day, for you to stay in tune, stay connected, stay in that place of peace and joy and happiness, and reshift the thinking, reprogram the thinking that might be in your mind that's causing you to not live in harmony with everything that's happening. All righty. We're back. By the way, they can get that book at courage2change.us. Courage2change.us. Thanks, Jane. All right. Using pain. Let's tell you a story. Using pain, you know, to heal us. Really.
I was talking about how pain is a necessary part of life. And normally pain is associated with any number of emotions, and it's supposed to, because pain is there to teach us. We're supposed to have a lot of negative feelings and negative emotions about pain, so we avoid it. That's how we learn. You know, you run around in a maze, and it gets zapped. If it makes the wrong turn, it doesn't do that again. That's how life is designed. We are designed to do that. However, what I realized when I was going through as much pain as I was with my brain, if I put my hand over a stove and it hurts, I, I'm told something that's hot, it's going to burn me, you could injure your hand, learn from the pain. My brain pain wasn't teaching me anything. It was there, it hurt. I wasn't doing anything wrong. I was doing everything I needed to, as a matter of fact. So I had to teach myself that the pain I was having didn't need to be associated with anger or anxiety. It was just there. And once I realized that, or at least at the same time, I realized that pain and that anger and anxiety was making the pain worse. Like, I would feel this pain, I would get angry about it, I'd get depressed about it, it would raise my blood pressure, that my head would start pounding more, and it would make it worse. And I realized that this cycle would continue, and I would stop it earlier and earlier. And so, again, period of weeks and months took me, but I learned to disassociate the two.
So here's and of course this is my lesson too. When I say I heard the voice, you got to feel the pain to make the change. Yes, you know, for me, I was disconnected from the pain. You were too. You're like, you're disconnected. You know, oh, well, you know, that I can think this, I can do this. And, you know, it gets worse, right? So pain, of course, teaches us. But if we're numbing ourselves out with overeating or with shopping, with medicating ourselves, with, you know,
work
in any number of ways.
To partying, yes.
From our feelings. Then we have to stop and let ourselves feel again, feel the pain and make change, right? This pain will teach you very quickly what you need to heal, change, develop, grow, or evolve into. And that's what we're talking about here. Now, some of you out there are going, well, I don't want to feel any more pain. I don't want to feel pain.
Yeah. Why pain? I actually asked myself, why do we have to feel pain? And I realized,
good question.
I realized this. Because that's the only way we'll avoid the things we need to avoid. Yeah. If you teach with reward and pleasure, now you're being trained. You're not learning anything. You're being trained. There's a difference. Pain teaches you. Reward trains you. That's the difference.
That's really good. All right. So a couple. I thought I'd give you some hacks here that I think are really kind of good. So one of the things that I did was eliminate mental junk food. And the mental junk food was the watching the TV, listening to people that I really didn't respect. Okay. And letting go of anything that was unlike, for me, joy, happiness, love, compassion, understanding, wisdom, you know. So that was my thing. Let go of mental junk. And the other thing I did was every day I kept a journal. And, I still write. Of course, I'm an author now. You know, that's how I started writing. But I kept a journal of, what didn't work. In fact, I do this mentally every day. What worked, what didn't work, and where can I improve tomorrow? But I started to journal that, and I journal my wins. That's a hack that really helps us to think about, you know, who we are, what we can do, right? I think journaling is really important. And the last thing that I did, and in fact, I wrote a book around it. I don't have it here, I guess, sitting over here on my shelf, but it's called my first book, Ask and You Will Succeed. And it's 1,001 ordinary questions to create extraordinary results. I learned that I had to learn how to question, but ask empowering questions. Like, you know, what are the three most important steps I can take to have a quantum breakthrough around relationship? I'd ask questions like that I'd never asked before and be thinking, quantum breakthroughs, I have to look that up. Where'd that even come from, right? And so when I started asking better questions, I started to get better answers, right? You know, if you ask, whatever you ask, I guarantee with this brain, you will get the answer.
You know what is interesting? Up until the point where I had the brain tumor, I assumed that everything that I thought the rest of my brain was privy to. I assumed that. But since my brain tumor and since my brain has stopped working perfectly, quote unquote perfectly, I realized that and this isn't something that happened after, but I realized one part of the brain does not necessarily talk to the other. And as I was fixing my brain, I did the same as you. I would take copious notes because I would forget everything. I realized that if I write it down and I see it, that's a different part of the brain. I'm like, oh, I can remember better. If I hear it, I see it, I speak it, I use different parts of my brain to kind of wrap my head around it, I can remember it better. That's when I realized the parts of our different parts of our brain really aren't that good at talking to each other. We have to, when you're asked yourself the question, you need to actually form the words, ask out loud so you can hear it. And then your brain is now processing the formation of the words, the process, the auditory hearing, the processing of what you just said. And that it's all working together. That's
all working together. One of the other hacks that I use is to heal me, and I still use to this day, is affirmation. And what that reminded me of what you were saying. So I will speak my affirmation three times out loud. I'll whisper it three times, and then I'll mentally chant it until I feel that is gotten into the superconscious mind of, yeah, right.
And now you have that mindset. Now, when you go out into your day and you meet the barista for the first moment of your life, you get that little shot of adrenaline. Guess what? You're going to be happy and positive about your day, as opposed to meeting that barista, getting a little shot of adrenaline, and you just thought about how hard it was to get out of bed and how long your day is going to be. You're going to talk to the barista like you're depressed, and your whole day is going to be set that way. So, yeah.
100%. You know, I guess one of the sayings that I got from Yogananda was, nobody can make you happy if you choose to be unhappy, and nobody can make you unhappy if you choose to be happy. And when I started to really get to the depth of that, you know, of course, that's talking about 100% personal responsibility, realizing we're not victims of anybody or any circumstance or anything. We create our own destiny. We create our own happiness. We create these beautiful lives or lousy lives. I've created a lousy life earlier in my career that I thought was a great life, but it wasn't. It was filled with stress and anxiety and worry and concerns. And it didn't matter how much money I made, right? I was always worried. I bet you were too.
The thing that freed me was looking up the definition between stressor and stress. Once I understood there's a difference between stressors in your life. You can't get rid of stressors. Like, right. There's going to be things that are going to be triggers out there, but the stress you feel from them is entirely up to you.
That's up to you.
Entirely.
Listen, James, we're out of time, man. This has been a great show. Thank you for doing this with me. You know, we kind of did this on the spur of the moment, but I really got to know you more and
100%.
My story more. My audience got to know us a lot better. So,
I for one truly appreciate hearing your story from beginning to end. I've heard little bits and pieces. We've known each other for years now, but I'm glad we got this opportunity to sit down and really discuss this. So this was eye opening and heart opening. Thank you.
Eye opening and heart opening. Yeah. Well. I pray that if you're in my audience today and you like this and there's somebody out there that you think could benefit by hearing our conversation, please pass that on to them. Thank you again, James.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And thank all of you for being here with us today. We appreciate you, and we hope that you take your life to the next level, whatever that is, and just heal it. Take care.